Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Welcome, everybody. Episode number 2 of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by Corn Nation. I am one half of your broadcast team, Greg Mahochko, and joined, as always, which is funny to say as always because this is episode 2, so we don't have many alwayses in the bag just yet, but my longtime friend and Husker fanatic and a very knowledgeable gent, Brian Toll. Brian, it was a week, it was a game, it was a win, sir.
Hey, yeah, I mean, people are going to complain about it. I mean, didn't look great in the second quarter, but I think the first quarter looked all right. I think they're in fourth quarter, Nebraska looked pretty good. You know, they kept Fresno State off the scoreboard the second half. You know, interception in the end zone last set of the game. Ran a true freshman out there at running kickoffs, ran a true freshman out at cornerback, and he got toasted a little bit and such like that. But in the end, I think Nebraska played all right. I think they really did.
We're not going to obviously break down the game, you know, series by series, play by play, or even quarter by quarter. There was a lot going on this past Saturday. I can't imagine what the feeling was in Lincoln at Memorial Stadium. I know the feeling that I had here in Southern Illinois at my home as I was watching this. I got home from work about 3:30, and first thing I did was turned on LSU Wisconsin. And shout out to our Big Ten, I don't know, rivals, but at least Big Ten, you know, co-members, the Badgers, for pulling what I don't think many saw happening, and that was beating a top five team in LSU and doing it the way it happened, the game-winning field goal by Rafael Gugliani.
Gagliano or something like that.
Yeah, and his, I mean, yeah, it's, you know, when you're on the same team, that's great, and you have 4 years or 5 years potentially to, you know, build relationships. But I would imagine that because there's such a small group of Division One, you know, kickers or punters, that it's kind of a fraternity. So the fact that he gave a shout out to, you know, Sam Foltz and tapped his, you know, beat his chest, and he was wearing number 27. And I don't know if he, I can't remember if he wore 27 last year or if this is something he wanted to do to honor.
He did not.
Yeah, so he's wearing number 27 to honor his friend. I know ABC commentators, you know, made note of it. And then you get to Lincoln, and you get to the game. You get to, I know certainly Husker fans didn't want to have to send the punting unit out on after the first drive, but I think it was the best to just get it off of, you know, our chest, all of that emotion. I remember, you know, seeing Tommy Armstrong on the sideline, very emotional when Nebraska put 10 men out on the field, took the delay of game, and I didn't even realize this until the next day or even, you know, Monday, but, you know, Fresno State, I didn't know that they declined the penalty. I didn't think anything of it. I can't watch that clip without getting a little emotional. And for everybody who was there at Memorial Stadium Saturday night, I get chills thinking about it, and I can't imagine what that atmosphere was like. But I think it was best to get that out of the way very early on.
Yeah, I agree. You kind of wonder if it, you know, if they hadn't punted that first set, you know, how much that would have lingered with the team. And you know, you still think about it because you know it's coming. Everybody right. knows it's coming. The other side knows it's coming. Everybody that doesn't know is pretty much just the folks inside the stadium paying the tickets and watching. So, you know, everybody goes, well, first set of the year, we want to look crisp. Well, you know, it doesn't work like that. It didn't. I mean, how many teams looked, you know, like unequivocal garbage the first game of the year. Tennessee did.
There were a
LSU,
lot.
LSU, hello.
There were a lot of teams that looked like
Florida State the first half looked like a team that was barely going to the Belk Bowl. And in the second half, they made, you know, Hugh Freeze fired. You know, bad weekend in the state of Mississippi. So,
yeah, Mississippi State looked like hot garbage. Northwestern looked like garbage.
Yeah, if you remember Northwestern, Northwestern had that really weird team that last year, you know. It wasn't so much that Northwestern looked like garbage. It's just, you know, the thing about that program that just is odd to me. If you watched that game, and I know you didn't, Greg, but, you know.
I caught bits and pieces. I saw the end.
Northwestern pimps this big old practice facility that has, you know, it's right on Lake Michigan and such like that. And it looks cool. It looks cool. But my two things are, number one, your stadium, the field on the stadium, looked like a junior high fest. I mean, unkempt grass. There were bare spots. There were bare spots.
What was worse, the Northwestern field or whatever it was, that junior high or junior varsity field? I know you saw the picture on Twitter with the sideline that was, you know, wavy.
Oh, you can at least wash the line off and redo it. I mean, you know, but plus, you know, the thing about Northwestern is, you know, they won 10 games last year and everybody kind of like, well, they kind of slided themselves 10 games. And you don't really kind of slight yourself, but I can see where everybody come from. And now all of a sudden, you know, Northwestern, you know, lost to a MAC team, probably a pretty good MAC team, and a guy that's going to get a really big paycheck and PJ Fleck. And all you saw at the Chicago Tribune Saturday was Illinois back. Illinois won big. They beat an FCS team, if I remember right.
They beat Murray State out of Kentucky. Yep.
Beat Murray State. Racers. Congratulations. You beat an FCS team. So did Purdue.
Now, in all fairness, Murray State used to be the Thoroughbreds.
I don't disagree with that, but, you know, there's a difference between studs at FCS and moderately tolerable at FBS.
No, I mean, and that's the thing, too, is – and again, you could almost say the same about Nebraska. You probably can see the same about Nebraska. Is Nebraska didn't play a world beater. You know, they played Fresno State, who admittedly has been down the last few years. So where is that litmus test? Where's that measuring stick? You know, how long until we – I mean, even when you host Wyoming, Wyoming's probably a little bit better than Fresno State, possibly. But then you've got Oregon and – that's going to be your first true test, and you might beat the first two teams by a combined 60 points. And then, you know, when the Ducks come to town, everything's off the table.
Well, here's what I think about Wyoming, okay, real quick. They won their game. It was at 3:30 in the bleeping morning. Okay, number one, can't remember, they went to three overtimes with Northern Illinois, a team that has a head coach that was really – they were really good when I think Jerry Kill was there. And then ever since what's-his-name went there, you know, they've been okay. They've been not great, you know. They didn't really – I wouldn't say they tore it up, you know. They had 266 yards of rushing. Okay, fair. So 245 – they had 243 total because they lost 23. They were pretty balanced, 240 and 240. Okay, that's fair. I don't think they – just absolutely destroyed every, you know, Northern Illinois. I mean, they gave up. Northern Illinois gave up, got 329 on the air, you know.
And that's the thing, too, about, I mean, Northern Illinois, they're still a good program. They are not at the level that they were, but they have played for some national championships here in the last few years.
They're a good MAC team. That's what, you know, what they've had been. So, Vegas has it opened at 24.5. Maybe that's just for action. Okay, so be it. The one hit kid, Brian Hill, he had a pretty good day. Pretty good day. What was it? Oh, yeah, 132, 133 rushes. Gained, he lost 7. When they do the game books, they give you how much they gained and how much they lost. So, I mean, Josh Allen had a good day, 245, 19-29. I thought Fresno State threw it pretty well. On Saturday night, I think the one Virgil kid was kind of iffy. I think the other guy that came in for him threw it pretty well. Nebraska gets two big secondary guys back. Antonio Reed comes back, and Nate Jerry comes back. I think Jerry coming back lets Kieran Williams stay on the field. You know, a kid that learned something is Lamar Jackson. You know, I mentioned this earlier today. I did a radio spot and I mentioned this today. Guys like Lamar Jackson who are coming in from California and highly ranked and literally playing in the first quarter of the first game of the year, no redshirt necessary. That's a big deal, not only for to get your feet wet and, you know, if you're going to take your lumps, take your lumps. But that's also a big deal in recruiting because a lot of these kids are looking to want to play early and, you know, they see something like that. They see something like a Trey Bryant taking off kickoff returns and getting a good, decent set in the fourth quarter of I wouldn't say a blowout at that time, but, you know, a fairly comfortable lead. You know, kids see that and they're like, well, I can perform because, you know, that's definitely something that, you know, makes a difference in recruiting. So, back to Wyoming, the one thing, you know, there's going to be a big push, you know, well, Craig Bull, you know, he wants this game really bad. He's got a lot of kids that, you know, Nebraska never looked at. CJ Johnson, Cluster Johnson's kid out of Bellevue who never got an offer from Nebraska, if I don't remember right. You know, and it's just a bunch of things like that. So I think what's going to happen is, there's going to be a push if this is what Nebraska could be if the game's close. So,
you talk about, you know, Nebraska kids not getting an offer from Nebraska. And it reminds me of an article that I read today. And I think it was you or somebody else in the Slack group who shared it. But
It was me.
It was a letter, you know, from North Platte native and NFL. I guess we can call him a star. Why not? Anyway, pro football player, San Diego Charger, Danny Woodhead, to his 18-year-old self, kind of explaining, you know, the disappointment, the heartbreak, if you will, of not getting that offer from Nebraska, but how it helped him become the person, the man and the player that he is, and you know, how grateful he was. And I know Danny. I obviously haven't talked to him in several years, but I met him in my time up in Chadron when I was, you know, stationed up. I don't want to say stationed, but when I was living and working up there for radio, so I got to see him play at Chadron State, and the kid always, you know, showed me something special in the way he carried himself on and off the field. So that's that's not just a letter, you know, to 18-year-old Danny Woodhead, but that's a letter, I think, to any high school athlete who, you know, can maybe they don't get that first choice of school, you know, to continue their career, but a door opens somewhere. Not Nebraska or Michigan or Notre Dame or Alabama, they're not going to call everybody. And there are going to be teams all in schools all across the country that want your particular set of skills. And so that's, you know, I think that's a nice takeaway from that is, you know, count your blessings and realize that, you know, you have this incredible talent that not everybody has and to make the best of it and the most of it wherever you end up.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, you kind of saw it with when Bo was here and how he kind of, I guess the term is like slow play a lot of kids. Riley's kind of sort of done that with a couple kids. Noah Font from Omaha last year who went to Iowa. I think the thing is, you know, the staff has done a pretty good job evaluating the talent they've brought in.
No, yeah, I'm not saying.
But what happens is. The fan base always wants the underdog. This fan base really just lives off the walk-on and the underdog making it. And they really do. I mean, nobody can doubt that when I say that. So it's just interesting how, you know, a kid like a Graham Nabity, you know, that just got put on scholarship this year, or a Brandon Riley or a Luke Gifford, you know, you're cheering for, seems like they cheer for those guys more than they cheer the guys that we want to make the difference. The Josh Banderas is I'm sponging here. The Terrell Newbies. So, you know, it's you mentioned Woodhead. I always say it this way. Okay, Nebraska whiffed, but so did Colorado State. So did Wyoming. So did Colorado.
Colorado, Kansas, so Kansas State. A lot of
schools did.
Yeah.
You know, hindsight's always perfect. So,
let me, and maybe it's because I've been watching Last Chance U on Netflix. Have you heard of that? Have you watched any of that?
I've heard of it. I don't have a Netflix account, so I've been able to watch it, unfortunately.
It's a good way to spend $9 a month, I'm telling you. Eastern or East Mississippi Community College in Scuba, Mississippi, which is a town of about 700 people, and they have junior college football national championships from 2011, 13, and 14. But it's a JUCO. I mean, a lot of the guys are there for, I think, a lot of the reasons you expect, you know, talented athletes to be at a junior college. Grades are a factor. There was one who transferred there from Florida State because he was not happy with the playing time he was receiving in Tallahassee. And, I mean, you got some local guys who, you know, worked hard, you know, in high school and got on the team. But it's funny because I watched that, and I guess I'm passing judgment here. So if it feels too preachy, you know, I apologize. But, you know, there are these kids who have so much talent, and they wonder why they're at where they're at is because they don't put any time in the classroom. You know, it we harp on it. I don't say we, you know, but we collectively harp on, I think, maybe as Nebraska fans, because student is the first word of student athlete, and Nebraska boasts as many academic All-Americans as they do. But there's something, as I watch that show, you know, I feel bad for some of these kids, but at the same time I don't, because, you know, all the talent in the world, if you can't manage a, you know, C average, you're not going to go anywhere. You're going to have to wait it out and maybe get, you know, a call from an NFL scout, you know, in a few years. I don't know.
I think the point, and I haven't watched it 1 second. I say this not having 1 second of the show watched. I think what you're seeing is, you know, you're seeing kids that when they're in high school, okay, you know, there's always someone to tell you, hey, study and such at the school and everything. But you get a lot more people, and this happens a lot. This happens a lot, that all these people show up and they call them handlers, and they're uncles, their cousins, their nephews, and they all want to help this guy out, quote unquote. But what they also don't understand that, hey, you know, when you do make it in the NFL, when you do make it, get that first signing bonus.
Remember who scratched your back. Yeah.
Yeah. And so then what happens is, when you get to a kid like that at JUCO, a lot of people say that, you know, when you get to JUCO, you're a failure, and it's not fair.
I believe that. I mean, I'm not saying anybody's a failure.
But and there's a gentleman I keep reading that does these flame out. There's a lot of kids that you can kind of sort of tell that before they even get to school that they're going to flame out in a way. That's the one dirty secret about recruiting. You can recruit all the 4 or 5 stars you want, but, you know, some of these kids don't even make it to campus. Some of these kids don't, you know, they're there three months and they don't get going to school. Then all of a sudden they got D's, and then all of a sudden, you know, they're in probation, and they don't understand why they can't spend time with their, you know, they lose the fact that they want to, they see their buddies spending time with their friends on weekends, and they're in study halls. They don't know why. And then they see pass them on the depth chart because they can't, you know, they're not in the playbook because they got to study. Some people handle it well, some people don't. It's just the way life is. The ones that always interest me are the ones that happen to, you know, you always, when you're hearing people discuss it on recruiting sites and such, and I know a lot of people don't get recruiting sites, they don't care to look at them, that's fine. You always kind of know that, man, if this kid doesn't work out here, where's he going to work out at, you know? Mm-hmm. There, I mean, there, oh, where's a, Where's the one kid? You know, there's one, Clinkscales. The Clinkscales kid. Terrell Clinkscales, he wanted to come to Nebraska, and then all of a sudden he duped Nebraska for Kansas State. Okay. And then if I remember right, he went to K-State for a year, and now nobody knows where he is. Well, I know where he is. He's at Texas A&M Commerce, which is not the worst school to go to. But he came out of Dodge City, and, you know, again, he wasn't at JUCO because he didn't have talent. Okay.
Right.
He was there at JUCO because he wasn't the greatest freaking studier. He was a 4-star. He was one of the best. He was one of the best DTs in America when he was at Dodge City. Okay. It's not even so much that he didn't make it out of. How did he not make it out of Dodge City and Nebraska? So how did he not get a chance at Kansas State? You know? I mean, K-State, it's not the worst school to be at.
Right.
You know? I don't get why. I don't get why this thing happened. I don't get it. I really don't. I wish every kid just worked out. I know it's not going to happen. Yeah. But shows like that are the ones that really are sad. It's sad to watch some of them, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
You really want them to cheer for them, and then all of a sudden, you know, it's, well, they got a C in this class, a C minus in this class.
Here's what I'm – because – and again, this is – I don't have knowledge of athletic programs. I don't. I'm on the outside. But this show does offer you a kind of a rare glimpse into, you know, what – even on a small scale, what I think an athletic, you know, or collegiate football program looks like. And now, granted, this roster and this program is much smaller than, you know, a Nebraska or an A&M or UCLA or anything like that, but they have an academic advisor. They have a woman on the university or college staff whose job is to essentially follow around these athletes and make sure they're doing their homework. But my problem is when they show up to class first day and they don't have a pencil, they don't have anything to write with. And she's like, well, do you have a pencil? No. She's like, don't you think you need one? Eh. You know, I mean, I maybe these guys are seeing dollar signs in their future based on, you know, talent alone, but what is it? Herb Brooks says Kurt Russell says, as Herb Brooks in the movie Miracle, is, you're not talented enough to win on talent alone. There's a little.
But ask yourself this question. If they can't do something like that, they can't, you know, and maybe they can't afford it, that's fine. You know, a lot of these kids don't have a lot of money. They're living on, you know, the training table and, you know, student housing, and they only get the $500 a month. Maybe that's got to go home, or
yeah. But maybe, man, they got the iPhones and the Beats headphones, and I mean,
follow me here, though.
I'm old guying it up here, so
yeah. If they can't take this, if they can't even at the very least ask for like a notebook, okay. You know, I thought most kids now get laptops and stuff, but that's just me. You know,
I remember, what was it, after Sue, you know, got drafted, didn't he supply the football team or all the lockers with their own iPads and stuff?
Yeah. Yep. But if you're not able to ask for like a pencil or something, or you don't think, hey, maybe I need to take something right with or right on or something like that, if you can't be trusted to do that to class, who's going to trust you with $1 million contract? Honest question. Who's going to trust you with that? Who's going to trust you if you can't make sure you get to class on a daily basis? How can you make a meeting? Okay. How can you be expected to be on time for practice? How can you be you know, when you're not on campus. If you're on campus, you're just walking there. That's one thing.
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just, you know, it astounds me, you know, that, you know, and again, I'm coming off as preachy, and I know that, and listeners, I apologize. But if you're, you know, a 19, 20-year-old kid trying to better your – maybe you don't care about academics, but you care about getting – you know, and this is Mississippi, so we'll say SEC. You care about getting to the SEC. Don't you think you need to put in a little bit of time in the classroom just to, you know, raise the grades? And you know, I can't judge too much. I'm only about three episodes in. It's just the things that I see. I was like, really? I know it happens everywhere. It's just, like I said, I'm old manning the heck out of things.
You know, and one thing, you don't need that SEC. Do you need that SEC team to hit you? Okay, because you got to be better than 24 other guys are bringing in. You know, I mean, the degree gets just as well probably from like Southern Miss. Okay, UAB. Think about it. There's guys in UAB that are practicing for 2 years straight. They're not going to see a game.
Right.
You know, Central Florida, they're 0-12. They need help. Scott Frost just broke an 0-4 season streak. Kansas. Okay.
No, I'm.
It's Kansas. Nobody cares. Well, guess what? Number one, you're going to get that education just as much as you're going to get, you know, from the Bama and the Auburn and everything. You know, you're going to. Campus life is campus life. Yeah, granted, you want to be a. Kansas probably gives you a chance to start. Southern Miss probably gives you a chance to start.
True.
You know, granted, yeah, you can be on Bama and kind of sugarcoat and coattail somebody to maybe an SEC title, you know. But, you know, everybody has these big, big dreams about where they want to go. And, oh, I'm going to hit this. I'm going to get this. You know, for every one of those, there's like a Christian Bell out of Bama that, you know, Christian Bell was a kid that last cycle, the 2015 cycle, wanted to visit Nebraska. Last minute, he was probably going to sign with Nebraska if he could visit. Nick Saban had him committed to Alabama. Saban goes, you visit, you lose your scholarship.
Mm.
Well, okay, well, I'll stay committed to Bama then. Next week later, okay, you're signing, but you're going to gray shirt. You're not going to go on scholarship till the next fall, till winter. Okay, so he's not on the team, so he's got to afford the first, you know, he goes from having the ability to have a full ride somewhere to having to pay for his first semester of college.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then all of a sudden, now he can't eat at the training table. He's considered a walk-on, can't eat at the training table, if I remember right. And then all of a sudden, now he's gone. And Christian Bell left Bama. I have to look it up real quick where he went. But all of a sudden, he leaves, you know, Bama, and he's lucky because he lands at a decent spot like Wisconsin. Okay? He's a guy that could have helped Nebraska. Now he's going to hurt Nebraska because he can be playing against them.
Right.
And this is back in July. He enrolls on January 27th. He leaves on July 24th. I mean, was it worth him to have to sit out that year for it? Now he's got to sit out another year. Now he's going to lose, you know, he loses. If he redshirts, he redshirts, so be it. But he's going to now lose his another year having to sit out. So he's going to sit out for 2 years. He's sitting out for 2 years, you know, without an injury. Are you really going to contribute? Hopefully he does, but, you know, all of a sudden the odds come a little more against you.
Let's change it up. While we're talking recruiting, this is something that I thought of yesterday or earlier today. I don't remember exactly which, as we record this on Tuesday evening, which is different from the Thursday evening last minute that we recorded last week. But I want to talk about recruiting because Nebraska brought in a bunch of stars, you know, as far as the recruit grading system goes. We don't know if they'll end up being stars on the field, but, you know, some 5 stars and some 4 stars for that season opener against Fresno State. I don't know when these young men decided that was going to be their official visit. How long in advance you know, and I don't need a long answer here, but how long in advance were these decisions made where, like, Keyshawn Johnson Jr. and Darnay, and how long were these – was it established that these guys were going to be coming for week one?
Usually by July, they figure it out.
Okay.
At the start of July, they don't really figure it out. The only crack that I have against Nebraska on that fact of the matter is that they're always the first ones. You know, if you can – you tend to remember the stuff you lately do.
Sure,
like your lap, you'll remember more. Does it hurt Nebraska? It probably won't on this week to happen. They should get some kids out of there. I still think Jameer Calvin, the wide receiver, liked it. I think Donovan Peoples-Jones, if there's a team that he's not going to like outside of – there's a team that he's going to go to that's outside of Michigan, it is Nebraska. He's kind of a –
Now that's the one who he's visiting Ohio State when Nebraska plays Ohio State at Ohio State, isn't he? Or
if I have to look it up, I think he is.
I thought that's what I read because I think that was the link from Cleveland.com. Yeah. But that's a story for another day. And that kid's out of Detroit. Okay, so you know, let's say you know just to kind of round it out that these dates, you know, these official visits were set early July. The wreck that, you know, tragically, you know, cost, you know, the lives of Sam Fultz and Mike Sadler, I believe. Did I get the name right?
Yes.
That was late July? Mid to late July?
Yeah.
Here's what I'm getting at, and I'm going to preface everything by saying that obviously something had to be done to memorialize Sam Fultz. In no way do I think that the program or the university was doing this in any way to try to benefit off of tragedy, but it was the first home game and we did have these, you know, big recruits in. If you're an 17, 18 year old kid and you see this type of presentation and production, and that's not, maybe that's not the best word, but this. I can't think of the word I'm looking for now, but you see what they are doing for a fallen teammate. I would look at that and be like, wow, this is a place that really cares. You know, they care about us and I guess what I'm trying to say is the tribute that they did to Sam Fultz, the pregame ceremony, the 10 men on the field, everything, was that I don't think it was deliberate at all, but if you're a recruit on the sidelines for that, do you look at that and think, you know, this is a place that cares, or do you think, let's get to the game? Is my question as I'm posing it, does it make sense?
Hey, don't mind me. I just spoke like 20 seconds without my mute on. I had to cough. I don't think so much the production matters because I think they're going to do something. You have a month and a half, no matter what, to do something.
Mm-hmm.
I think what you see is how the fans react to it and how the, you know, the appreciation that the fan base, that the supporters of the team. And Fresno State was actually really cool about it. I think the way you, in a way, I guess, I follow your point, you see how everybody was involved in it. I think that's a big deal because then you realize, hey, you know, we're not going to forget him. You know, yeah, granted, it's just, you know, the first snap of the game and we got to move on, but we're going to remember this. And I think you see how everybody gets involved in it and how the whole team really kind of gets into it. That's what you're going to notice something from that. Definitely, because the whole family aspect and not only the team, but how the fans about it feel about them as well. That's what you're going to take off pretty well, I would think. Plus, I also think, you know, you sell that, hey, these guys care about you. We care about you. Once you're a Husker, you're a Husker for life. I think that's what you sell it as.
90,000 plus in the stadium cares about you, you know.
Yeah. Yep.
And that's fine. And again, I want to stress to the listeners that in no way whatsoever did I ever feel, at least in posing the question or thinking about it, that, you know, that the program was trying to be like, well, I think if it was the red-white game and there were, you know, no recruits there whatsoever, if there was nobody in the stands, I think they would have done something. But just the timing of it all, I think that, and I don't want to use the word advantageous because, again, I don't like putting that connotation or that spin on there that the university thought in any way that they would benefit, you know, from this.
I think they would have done it that way regardless of absolutely. Nobody visited or anybody visited. So,
okay, yeah, that's the point I'm getting across. It was, but it becomes what, you know, in the face of tragedy like that, obviously, you know, and again, I think I said on social media, I never met Sam Fultz. I never had any relationship with him, connection with him. I probably never even tweeted at him, you know, last year or anything like that. But watching the tunnel walk, which somebody shared the link of the tunnel walk today, and I got to see that. And then going back, and I've seen it. It was on ESPN, you know, Big Ten Network, all of these clips of the delay of game. It's as crazy as it sounds for somebody I've never met. And I know, people, as unfortunate as it sounds, people die in car wrecks every day. But for whatever reason, maybe it's because of the scarlet and the cream. I don't know. That one affects us. I don't, like I said, my point, long story short, is I don't think that, you know, the university ever was out to do anything to benefit from it. They don't have to. They wanted to honor a teammate and a member of that, you know, football team. I love the idea of the scholarship. Everything about it. Like I said, it's a poorly worded question and poorly presented thought from me. I loved everything that they did to honor Sam on Saturday. I think that you know, if the recruits can see the kind of love that the fans have for the members of the team, individual members, not just necessarily, you know, I know that, you know, the common thought across, you know, most sports, I would think, is that the name on the front of the jersey is more important than the name on the back of the jersey. But I think if, you know, these young kids coming in see 90,000 plus strong and then social media and all this other stuff about, you know, this to me was bigger than, and, you know, I don't want to try to minimize, well, I won't play that comparison game. But I don't know. It advantageous if these young kids can be like, you know what, we're not just, you know, athletes out there to, you know, move a football or you know, catch or throw or something like that. We're people. This fan base recognizes that. From that aspect, I think, yes, it was advantageous that they were able to do something to celebrate Sam's life. I'm talking in circles. Let's change the damn topic before I put my foot further in my mouth.
I was wondering when you're going to get somewhere.
Thanks, Brian.
Personally. Well, I didn't want to interrupt you or nothing.
So. I at least know that when I talk, I talk in circles. And we'll always have that.
I will say this. To hell with the, I don't ever like to condemn people, but the hell with the dude that broke up to the house of St. Bolt's brother.
Yeah. Yeah, that was ridiculous. When that news broke, it makes me, you know, think that in society that you know, we are now, I'm kind of surprised it doesn't happen more often, because, you know, some way or another, people die all the time, and more often than not, when somebody passes, there are people who are gone for extended periods of time, even if it's, you know, be it out of town or just for the day for a funeral or something like that. And I'm just kind of surprised that more cold-hearted bastards don't take advantage of that, I guess. Thankful, but surprised.
Oh man. Yeah, I just don't get what possesses people to do that. And then if it's the gentleman they caught, he got drunk and got caught with it, allegedly got a DWI and everything. It's just, man, people suck.
They do.
Not everybody sucks. Trust me, not everybody sucks. If you think you'd suck, you might. You probably don't, but you might. But people just suck.
Let's see. We've talked a little. We haven't talked much about the Fresno State game. I was surprised at A, you know, grateful at how much they ran the dadgum ball, but two, a little surprised that they didn't throw.
Piss off.
What?
Piss off.
Shut up. I was surprised that they didn't. That I guess maybe that there wasn't more balance. You know, I don't mind the.
Oh my fucking God. Really? You're this guy? You're this guy. You're this guy? You're this guy. You're the guy. Oh, I want to run the ball. Oh, okay, we run the ball. Where's the balance? Shut up. Just shut up about it.
No.
Shut up.
You're misunderstanding me. I was pleased.
I'm understanding you completely. Oh, well, we should have shown some balance. Well, yeah.
What did I say?
During Purdue, if you just run the damn ball, I know. 1994. Oh, bye-bye. Ooh, Tommy Frazier. Shut up.
I'm going to go back and I'm going to replay the part where I say I'm surprised there wasn't more balance. And by that, I mean, I was surprised that I mean, I'm glad he had the catch to, you know, keep the streak alive, but Westerkatch only had one catch.
Yeah, Jesus. I mean, yeah, he did, but Tommy's going to be, okay? Tommy's going to be.
You got awful worked up about this. I should have gone back talking about
it. Everybody, you know, we got to run the ball. Run the ball. We should have shown balance. Shut up.
I think he already said
Shut
that.
Your mouth.
No,
shut it.
I'm perfectly happy with the offense that was out there. I liked it. I liked the fact that they controlled the clock. I liked the fact that they ran the dadgum ball. Shut up. Don't you stop me. Don't you do it.
God damn it.
All right. Now we have to put an explicit rating on there. No, I liked the... I like the fact that we saw four running backs. I would have liked to have seen one of them a little bit more, but that's neither here nor there.
Do you know what was nice to see, though, out of running the ball?
That the offensive line got a pretty good push?
The right side of the offensive line, Knievel, did pretty good.
Should we just call him Evil?
No, that's mean.
Evil Knievel?
No, it seemed like Nebraska actually liked to run right. It did.
I wasn't paying close enough attention. I apologize. I was just like, oh, there's forward progress. That's good.
The one thing I would say about pass blocking when we did pass, the one time that Tommy got to set his feet and just fire, he completed a 64-yard touchdown pass.
Well,
okay.
I mean, you know.
I will say this about Fresno State. You saw a lot of blitzes. Saw a lot when they threw. When Fresno State threw, there were a lot of blitzes. And if that's the hardest they see for the first three or four games, come out of blitz and not knowing where they're coming from, live with that. That's fine because there was a lot. Six of the nine Fresno State coaches, Tim Dreyer brought in last year. So there's something fairly to be said about, you know, not having a lot of info and not knowing what they're going to do. I think the one thing I wish they kind of did is I kind of wish they involved the tight end more in the passing game. If I remember right, Seathan Carter only really had two targets. He had one catch that, you know, I've kind of harped this last few days. They had a catch that was wiped out because Alonzo Moore couldn't get on the line of scrimmage and make it seven on the line. And then he got targeted a couple more times. He got targeted on a ball that Tommy tried to put through his face mask.
Hey, he is Tommy Armstrong.
Jesus. Good Lord. You know.
Is it getting past your bedtime? You're getting awful cranky all of a sudden.
I am. I'm older than you, so shut up. Anyway.
And I'll stay off your lawn, sir.
It sucks. Chop it up. I think that's the one thing I kind of wish we saw. A little more time. Maybe they just want to keep it playing vanillas, because then, you know, the next 3 weeks you kind of have something in your back pocket, and they'll show more.
Let me ask you this:
what Seathan can do.
Go ahead.
We know what Seathan can do. Sam Cotton, even though he's a cotton.
I like how you preface it.
Even though he's a cotton, he grades out pretty well. You know, it's like I said about Ross Zerzes, or however you pronounce it.
Dezerus,
whatever.
I don't know.
That's he's never going to just make like the ooh, wow play, you know? But he's going to be in position to make the right play. He's never going to wow you with his physical ability because he just won't. But
he'll do the things day in and day out to help you succeed.
My God, consistency is a big thing.
Now let me ask you, because you said, you know, about mentioning, you mentioned keeping it kind of vanilla. Do you keep it vanilla for Wyoming and hold on to your flashy stuff for Oregon, or do
No, because the way you're going to beat Oregon is keeping them off the field. Okay, I mean, we've seen this offense where Oregon, I'm going to look it up, see how many plays they ran.
You can do that next week.
I will. But the thing is, the thing is about Oregon is they run, you can kill them, you know, 40 minutes, 20 minutes on time of possession, and they're going to run 110 plays. And that's what beats you, because you're tired. They can run the same play off of the same personnel. They can run the same 6, 7, 8 plays, boom, 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 off the same personnel group, you know? That's the big deal, you know? I mean, they didn't really look great to begin with against UC Davis, because if I remember right, UC Davis scored first, and it was an 8-7 game because 2-point conversion after the first quarter, and then, you know, it kind of just fell into whatever. But that being said, Oregon just kills you like that. Now, defensively, I don't know how well they're going to do. I mean, it sounds like, if I remember right, Cal Davis threw for three. Yeah, they outthrew Oregon 303 to 271. I mean, granted, they put it up almost 50 times, but, you know, that's something you can do. They didn't rush it very well against Oregon, so maybe that's something to watch. Oregon did run it pretty well. It's going to be interesting to me how Nebraska keeps that offense off the field. If you keep that offense off the field, you get rested and you control the clock like that. You've got part of the problem, but at the same time, you know, big thing, third down conversions are going to be big for Nebraska that game. You know, getting off the field on third down on defense, converting, staying on the field on offense is going to be a big, big deal. So
let me ask you this before we head out of here. Wyoming is the next opponent for the Big Red, and they were coming, obviously, to town on Saturday. Predictions for the game?
Predict it's going to be a sunny day.
My prediction?
I think Nebraska's going to cover. I really do think. It's 24-point spread. I think Nebraska – I think Wyoming kind of makes you wonder a little bit. They're good enough to make you try, make you have to get out some stuff that you haven't got out before. But I also think that Nebraska gets Brandon Riley back. They should have a little healthier Jordan Westerkamp. They get Nathan Jerry back. Hopefully,
more depth in the secondary would be nice. More depth in the
secondary. They get Antonio Reed back. We're gonna probably see a team that's focused. They got the gist out. I think the good thing about this week was the message that Mike Riley sent. Hey, we're happy with one, but this is what's wrong. This is what's wrong. I don't think 7 penalties is bad in an opener. For comparison's sake, Florida State had 10 the first half against Ole Miss.
That's why that damn game lasted forever.
Well, no, it's also because every point was scored in the main kind, it seemed like. Well, that helped it, but you know, it's easy to clean up, you know, things like celebration penalties.
Right.
There's 2 celebration penalties.
But again, I'm not going to fault Zach Darlington for spinning a football after, you know, he's waited long enough. He can spin a damn football.
Yeah. I'll say that Aaron Williams kind of probably shouldn't have got the flag.
Let me tell you this or ask you this as well. While we're talking penalties briefly, and we are running out of time, so let's try to keep it short. We talked about targeting last week, and Nebraska had one targeting called and another that was called but then reversed. What and then, you know, you have other games, the Minnesota game where three Gophers are tossed. Where is the misunderstanding of what's targeting and what's not? Because as we saw in the Texas Notre Dame game, what sure as shit looked like targeting was not called, and then
they came out and Tuesday and said, well, we reviewed it and we didn't think it was targeting.
If that's not targeting, I don't know what is. And
here's what I'll say about it. They're supposed to err on the side of caution. Okay, and I'll get that. But what is going to bug me about this rule, it bugged me about it last year, what's going to bug me about this year, is when it's reviewed, you're like, well, yes, he hit him in the head and everything. When something like – now the rule is to where you're supposed to be able to – the instant replay guy is supposed to be able to review that on the spot and call down for a review. There's no, you know, something I saw with everything this year. There's this little tripod, and you probably saw it. There's a little tripod that looked like an iPad in it.
That's what it is, and they even admitted it as such.
Well, you know what I didn't see happen in, you know, if you talked about it and you saw it and you came to the conclusion that it wasn't targeting, that's one thing. Okay, because then I can hold you really liable saying you both saw it, you both talked about it, and you're the only two in the building that didn't come to the conclusion of targeting. The fact that, you know, quote unquote, well, they looked at it. No, they didn't, because the fact that the guy was prone on the ground, the Torrey Hunter was prone on the ground and shaking cobwebs and wasn't seeing the rest of the game, that should have clicked it for you guys. I mean, there's only three of you back there looking at it. So
I know that, you know, he's got a famous father, you know, Torrey Hunter, you know, the baseball player, but it's not often that, you know, they escort the parents and the family down into the locker room to, I mean, they just don't do that. I don't know if that was parental privilege because of who his dad was, but you got to think that he got hit hard enough that they called in, you know, called the parents down. I mean, they don't, maybe they have them in there, but, you know, have them come down in a serious injury, but they don't show it because their parents aren't famous. I don't know, yeah. There needs to be something done, and we talked about this, you know, targeting last week as well. There needs to be something done about the rule where you can get clear, you know, definitive.
You know, the Texas player said it was targeting.
Yeah, and then he
targeting when you don't get caught. Well,
he quickly took that tweet down, but I saw it was screen grabbed and somebody shared it around.
How would you feel if you were caught? You know, it was your teammates. You know,
say that again.
How would you feel if it was your teammate
that got hit?
That got hit, and somebody on the other team put that crap up there.
Ah, yeah, I'd be pretty fired up.
That's my point. I mean, you know, it goes back to kind of like the whole JUCO thing. Kids don't understand that, you know, what they could lose. Look at Darlington. You know, remember a couple of years ago I told you Darlington shouldn't play anymore?
Yeah, he had plenty of concussion problems.
I showed you specifically. There's this video from Darlington after he got the concussion on ESPN the opening day, and he talked like he could not. He had a 0.2 blood alcohol level. Like, oh my, you know, he literally, and he was sober. He's helping people out, and he could barely form words. And I'm like, there's no way this kid can play football anymore.
What was it? It was it Hoke at Michigan when the quarterback just got obliterated and then like needed help up and then he stayed in for another play or two?
Possibly.
A couple years back.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of Hoke's undoings.
We didn't see what was going on.
Yeah.
Or the way Brady said it. Oh, la, 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 la. You know, so I think people do mean well when it comes to it, but I think what happens is you got people that won't. We need more people that have the guts to say, "Shut the game down. This guy's hurt," and that goes in the NFL as well. Supposedly, there's a guy that is supposed to be watching this every game, and I think it was a dude from the Chargers last year that had to retire because, He had a concussion during the game, and he kept in the game. And why did he step in? Well, it seems like they just don't have the guts to say something about it. So,
yeah. All right. We've been all over the place. We Next week, friends, we'll be happier. We'll get to recording a little sooner. Brian won't be as grumpy. I won't talk, you know, in circles and put my foot in my mouth, and we'll just be happy. Nebraska will be 2-0 next week.
We're paid professionals. Don't try this at home.
Yeah, yeah. Wait, you say we're unpaid professionals?
Yes.
Yeah, that's about right. All right, so this has been the Five Heart Podcast on Coronation. For my broadcast partner and friend, Brian Toll, I'm Greg Mahochko. Thank you so much for listening, sharing, and telling everybody you know that Five Heart is all the heart you need.
This has been a production of Coronation.com. For more, like Coronation on Facebook, follow Coronation on Twitter, and bookmark Coronation.com in your favorite browser.